All right, good morning. I want to welcome everyone to our MTS Executive Committee meeting of October 6th. We have Member Ila Rivera will not be able to join today, and Member Salas and Sotelis Lisa are en route, so should be here. We won't have a quorum, so I think what we'll do is just begin with our two informational items. We'll present that and see if myself or Mr. Hall have any questions, and we'll await the arrival of the other members for minutes. So let's go ahead. Let's take up item four. It's informational. We don't need a quorum for item four.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you. Dennis Desmond, Director of Planning and Scheduling, here with an update for our Clean Transit Advancement Campus. This is our sixth bus division that we've been working on for almost 2 years now. This will allow us to fully electrify our fleet as well as expand our service in the future. We identified a project area using our existing division locations and where we anticipate future service expansion will be. We've been working on community outreach and CEQA studies over the last 14 months. We considered 7 sites initially. We're now down to 1 preferred site for the project, and we'll be coming back to the board on October 20th with some decision points. There was a draft mitigated negative declaration issued for this project in July of 2022, and that will be coming back as a final report in 2 weeks to the board. We'll actually have 3 different recommendations for the board on October 20th. The first will be to approve the preferred site identified as Site 7 with the Title 6 site equity analysis included. Adopt a resolution to approve the final MND for CEQA, and to adopt a resolution for the development of a workforce development plan for this project. And I'll go into a little more detail on each of these. After a Title 6 site equity analysis done last fall, we identified Site 7 as a preferred site for the purposes of our CEQA technical studies. And that was based on a review of a number of different things for us internally, including the operational benefits, the community impacts, constructability, the cost and complexity of acquiring the various parcels for each site, and the potential tenant relocation needs. Following that, SANDAG assisted us with completing the CEQA technical analyses, including subjects such as air quality, cultural resources, hazardous materials, noise, emissions, water quality, that kind of thing. There's almost 24 of those. Those are all included in the mitigated negative deck. And the result of that is that the preferred site will have a less than significant impacts with mitigation included. This is that Site 7. So this is what we are proposing that the board approve as the project site. On the left, you can see where that falls within the entire study area, as well as the 6 other sites. We have 4 sites in the Ridgeview Webster community and 3 sites in the Mount Hope area. On the right is a little more detail of what Site 7 includes. Includes several industrial warehousing parcels. On the left side, that larger section, and then the smaller section is currently a parking lot. So the mitigated negative declaration, again, is the document, environmental document for CEQA purposes that we believe is the appropriate document. CEQA requires the study of physical impacts of the project on the environment, and then defines the circumstances under which that mitigated negative deck, and I'm just going to say MND from now on, is the appropriate CEQA document. We are in the process of finalizing our responses to the comments received from the draft MND. Again, it was issued in July. And the final MND will be coming for approval again in 2 weeks to the board. And then our NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Act review by the FTA will follow that CEQA approval of the MND. And I'll turn it over to Karen to talk about the workforce development plan.
Yes, good morning. One of the things that we've heard from the board as a priority over the last year or so, especially when we've brought up updates on where we are in planning this project, has been an interest in what new efforts MTS could do as it relates to workforce development and, you know, to help the local community. And so what we've put together that we'll be bringing to the board on October 20th with this item is a resolution that would direct staff to create a workforce development plan. And with some minimum features. So some of those would be to have staff look at ways that we can do local hiring and recruitment with MTS and our contractors and some of our partner agencies in that neighborhood. Also how we could partner for potential training, apprenticeship programs. And then in addition, right now, the FTA also has a really big initiative for workforce development, and they have some funding programs that are directly targeted at providing agencies like MTS with technical assistance and help in funding and developing workforce development programs. So one of the other things that we put in this draft resolution that will come to the board would be to direct staff to actively seek out, you know, funding from those grants for any of those areas. And then the proposal would be that once CTAC opens, we would come back annually with an update on what those efforts are. But since this is all so new and we don't actually have a facility yet and it's so far in the future, this would have staff start working on it as an early action item, but we wouldn't be able to have the details until closer to when this facility is ready to open.
So with that, just to repeat what the recommendations that will be coming to the board in 2 weeks will be, again, approve the preferred site, which is site 7. That includes the site equity analysis, adopt a resolution to approve the final MND, which will clear us for CEQA, and then adopt a resolution for the development of a workforce development plan for CTAC.
Awesome. Thank you. I know a lot of work has gone into this. This is, I think, one of the earliest things when I joined this board that we were talking about and shuffling around and trying to find a way through. So it's good to see it moving forward. Do we have any public speakers in this item?
We have none.
Okay. Oh.
We have one that just popped up. Carolina Contreras, please unmute yourself.
Yes. Hi. Yes, thank you. My name is Karina Contreras. I'm speaking in my capacity as transportation advocate for Climate Action Campaign. And I just really want to applaud MTS for moving forward with the Clean Transit Advancement Campus. This is obviously a critical feature of future transportation where we can have our zero emission buses, take over our CNG buses. So that way we can really have equity, especially in communities where there's so much air pollution. This is a great step in the right direction. And I look forward to seeing the proliferation of clean transit advancement campuses throughout the San Diego region. So I just really wanted to thank you for moving forward in a speedy fashion. Thank you.
That concludes public comment.
All right, thank you. Let me ask Mr. Hall or Mayor Sotelo-Solis if they have any comments or questions.
No, I'm fine. I need to drive by there and see it, but other than that, I'm fine.
Great. Well, I look forward to this coming to the full board as someone who daily seeks out land to solve problems. The fact we were able to land on one, I think, is good. What do we have a rough idea of timeline? Obviously, this is really early in the process, but what do we estimate this facility being done?
Our optimistic is 5 years. Realistically, it's going to be between 5 and 7 years.
Okay, good. Well, really positive stuff. No action for us to take, an informational item only. So thank you. Thank you, Dennis and team.
And I would mention to you that we are getting costing now for the facility. It's high because there's such volatility in the supply market. But at this point, we're hoping that that will kind of even out before we start construction.
We're 5 to 7 year time frame. We'll hit a recession between now and then. Costs will come down. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's go to item 22 or item five. I'm sorry, our 2022 special events update. Pretty excited about this item.
Yeah, while they're setting up, I might mention to you. So we are really excited about how we've positioned ourselves coming out of the pandemic as the mode of choice for a lot of these special events. You know, we saw it with Comic-Con. We're seeing it with the Padres games. I'll mention to you that, for instance, you know, on September 26th or 22nd, we hit 91% of our pre-pandemic levels. And in part, these are because of the fact that we're bringing people onto the system who never would have chosen transit, but now they're trying it for these special events. And I do believe that that's having an impact. So we're excited about it. Brent Boyd's now going to give us a nice update for the executive committee.
Thanks, Sharon. Brent Boyd, Manager of Service Quality and Special Operations for the Trolley. As Sharon mentioned, I'm going to provide an update on what we've been doing for special events lately and kind of what's coming up in the future. As you know, we've had special events were a big part of trolley operations for years and years and years, and we've had a big hiatus for the last couple of years because of COVID, but they're back in full force now. So what we're going to talk about is Padre season, concerts that we have at Petco Park, the return of Comic-Con, which is a huge thing for us, Snapdragon Stadium opening, other special operations, and upcoming events. So the Padre season, this is the first full season with capacity crowds since 2019. So 2020, there were no crowds at all. 2021, we had very limited crowds for the first half of the season. So, and then full capacity towards the latter half of the season. But this is the first season that we've had full capacity.
I'll send you all of them.
Okay, there. Perfect. Because I'd like.
So it's the first season we've had full capacity crowds since 2019. It's the first season that we've had Midcoast. So we implemented Midcoast in November. Padre season started in April. So we have a whole new audience for Padre games. Because of that, we did a full-on co-marketing partnership with the Padres to encourage transit to the games. We had trolley wraps, which you saw on the previous slide. We had bus wraps, which you see here. We have first pitch on-air placements. Every first pitch on the radio you hear is presented by MTS, and that's always something cool to hear. I've heard that a number of times. It's always kind of a surprise, and it makes a really big impression. We've had digital and social ads, both inside and outside Petco Park. And we've leveraged Padre communication channels, e-newsletters to their season ticket holders, push notifications on the MLB ballpark app, which is where people access their tickets, and so on. Before the season, the marketing department developed this video that we wanted to show. So the idea there is to get people transit to the Padres games, and I think it's worked. The operations plan that we have for each of the games, we provide extra service on all three lines. Really, we focus on post-game operations. We're typically for night games, we're at 30-minute headways by the time the game ends. So we extend our 15-minute headways as much as we can post-game to handle the post-game crowds. At the beginning of the season, we started off with extra pregame service, but what we found out is that our regular service could handle the pregame crowds. Typically, people are coming in pregame at staggered times, so our regular service could handle those extra crowds, and then you get big crush loads after the game. We'll see what happens next year. We might re-implement the pregame service, but for this year, we really just did it for the first week or so of the season. Most of the ridership is on the green line, but we do get significant passenger loads on all three lines. And we have some pictures of some of our loads. So you see in the upper left there are riders on the green line. You have these packed trains, and they get crushed loads after the game. The picture on the bottom left there is post-game here at 12th and Imperial, and that's people waiting for both the blue and the orange lines. And on the right is Gaslamp Station. So most of our riders go to either the Gaslamp Station and take the green line, or 12th and Imperial, take the blue or the orange line. And we see crush loads in both locations. For big games and sellouts, and the Padres have had a lot of sellouts this year. I think they're up to 26 or so. We're carrying about 6,000 or 7,000 fans per game, about 15% of the gate. Other games like the weekday day games, Sundays, that type of thing, around 4,000 or 5,000. So we're carrying pretty significant loads. But at Petco Park, it's not just Padre games. They also host concerts. And really, our first big event that we had after Midcoast opening was the Garth Brooks concert. And that was in March. And that was a sellout crowd. And we had a whole bunch of new passengers that have never ridden the trolley before, taking the blue line down from North County. So that we had some lessons learned on providing ridership concert. Since then, we've had Red Hot Chili Peppers, we had Grupo Fermé, the Stadium Tour, which was Motley Crue, Def Leppard, and a few other bands, and then Bad Bunny. And the interesting thing about the concerts is you really have diverse groups attending. So we work with the Padres ahead of time to find out where people are coming from and about the time that the concert's going to end and all that kind of stuff to develop our operating plan. Like on that weekend of the 27th and 28th, Grupo Fermé, they're a group from Tijuana. So we had huge ridership from the blue line, from the border and on the blue line north. So we really tailored our operating plan to provide extra service on the blue line. Whereas the very next day, the Stadium Tour, Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Joan Jett, and Poison, very different crowds. And they're coming from North County. And in that one, it was really an all-day thing where people are coming and going all day long because they had groups are going on at different times. So we really tailor our operations based on the different concerts. And for the concerts, all of these were basically sold out. We're getting the same levels of ridership for sold out Padre games, about 6,000-7,000 people per game or per concert. In the middle of all this, we had Big Bay Boom, which is the big fireworks show downtown. And what you're looking at there is the crowd at Santa Fe Depot. And the interesting thing about the Big Bay Boom is both for Padre games post-game, a lot of people say at the end of the game, but a lot of people filter out before the game ends. So you have kind of gradual crowds. Concerts, people generally wait till the end, but they might be going to the bars and restaurants after the concerts. For Big Bay Boom, as soon as the fireworks end, everybody goes to the trolley. It's amazing. It's instant flow to the trolley stations. And we've always had really big passenger loads at Seaport Village. That's been the big destination. What we found out this year is that Santa Fe Depot has really turned into the main area for people to get on the trolley because you have the combination of the blue line and the green line. We kind of foresaw that going into the event, but we didn't foresee it to this extent. So these are the people waiting for the blue and the green line at Santa Fe Depot. We carried about 8,000 people for that event. And the interesting thing about that is they are all gone within about an hour after the event. So crush loads, lots of people taking the trolley. We had some lessons learned from that event that we'll adjust for next year. Right after Big Bay Boom, we had Comic-Con, and that's our really big event. And this is our first large-scale Comic-Con since 2019. 2020, there was no Comic-Con. 2021, there was one like around Thanksgiving weekend that was very small and carried very limited ridership. So we put our full force into this Comic-Con. And we really wanted to focus on educating the passengers ahead of time. There were a lot of things that changed since the last one. We have a new fare system. In the previous Comic-Con, it was all Compass card. Now we're on to Pronto. So it was a new thing for all these passengers that hadn't used the trolley in a few years to learn the new fare system. We also developed a new special event line just for Comic-Con. That's the red line that you see on the map to the left. The blue, green, and oranges are regular trolley service. The red line is this new line just for Comic-Con that we operated Thursday through Sunday. And that had the opportunity to be very confusing because you have people that are regular riders aren't used to that red line. They might wait at gas lamp station and the only train coming by is the green line. Well, now all of a sudden you have the green line and the special event line. You need to make sure you get on the right train to get to your destination. You don't want to end up at the wrong spot. So a lot of education went in pre-event. We also had different parking options since the last time we had Comic-Con. The stadium station was closed. People used to park. We had 5,000 spots at the stadium station. People used to go there, jump on the green line. That was no longer an option because of the construction at the stadium. And then we had new spots at Tecolote, Balboa, and Nobel. So really big effort in terms of educating the passengers. A lot of signage at the station. We had to take one. We got information out ahead of time. We had a lot of staff out in the field helping people make sure that they got to the right destinations. We have a bolt there for cosplay safety, and what we're doing there is our security part. A lot of the people that come to Comic-Con have very intricate costumes with weapons and that type of thing, and our security staff would look at the weapons and clear and make sure that they were safe, that they're plastic, they weren't real weapons and such. So a lot of education in that respect. In terms of ridership, we carried about 246,000 people over the 5 days. And it's really 4 days. Thursday through Sunday is the main day. Wednesday night is just a preview night, very limited ridership increase. So really the bulk of that was over 4 days. And we see ridership from all over the system. The highest increase, Old Town, Balboa, Fashion Valley, San Ysidro, and Palomar. People are coming from all over. Well, the graph that you're looking at here is the darker colors are the ridership, those lines from Wednesday through Sunday of Comic-Con week. And the lighter colors are Wednesday through Sunday of the previous week. So you see the lines, major increases. That the red line or the red graph at the end, the special event line, we carried about 88,000 passengers over 4 days just on that line. And there's no lighter graph because we didn't run that before. In terms of days of the week, this is the darker colors, the darker gray is the ridership on the week of Comic-Con. So Wednesday on the left, Sunday on the right. And then the lighter gray is the ridership of that same day of the week before. So you see massive ridership gains every day of the week, particularly on Saturday, we about doubled our ridership. So it's a huge, huge increase in ridership. But that doesn't just happen. It takes a lot of work to make that happen. And our frontline staff is just incredible. This is really the first year that I was intricately involved in Comic-Con. I was just blown away by the effort of our frontline staff to make it work. You see all the vehicles, you see all the passengers, you don't see everybody behind the scenes. Transportation, we estimate that there's over about 11,000 hours of frontline work, 4,300 hours from transportation, that's our operators, our line supervisors, central control, all that kind of stuff. Security, see them in the bottom right, you know, you have thousands upon thousands of people out there, you need a security presence to keep people safe, make people comfortable. MOW, that's our maintenance away, they're making sure our signals are working. The track is clear, the gates are working. Anything happens on the right of way, our service gets to a standstill and it'll just ruin the entire week. Station ambassadors, we actually call them passenger support representatives now. There are folks on the left there. They were helping people get on the right trains, making sure they weren't getting on the red line when they wanted to get on the green line and so on. Our facility staff, when you have thousands of people coming through the station, it's a challenge to keep them clean. You know, the trash cans would get emptied and they'd be full minutes later. It is just a constant battle to keep the station when you're dealing with those passenger levels. And LRV maintenance. We were using almost every vehicle that we had on the fleet for service during Comic-Con. And if any of them broke down, it would cause a domino effect and really would have affected the service. We were operating every 7.5 minutes along the Bayside, every 5 minutes between Old Town and Santa Fe Depot. So if a trolley broke down, if a train broke down, it really caused huge backups across the entire system and we wouldn't be able to get people cleared out of the stations. So LRV maintenance had people stationed all over the system to make sure that if a train broke down, they could react to it quickly and get it moving. So it comes at a cost, providing all that service costs money. It costs about $430,000 in extra personnel. But we more than make up for it. Almost entirely in fares. You got about $325,000 worth of fares. That's our estimate. And then we make additional money from marketing efforts. The running of the Gaslamp Quarter Station, that becomes a big activation spot for NBC. We have lots of signage. We do the trolley wraps and that type of thing. So we estimate that we made about $400,000 operating margin there. Right after Comic-Con, we had the opening of Stadium Station, and this had been closed since the fall of 2020. And when you reopen a station after a couple of years, you don't simply just unlock the gates and let people in. You have to do a lot of work to make the station safe for passengers and presentable. So we have new signage out there. We did a lot of painting, cleaning, made sure data connections worked, all that kind of stuff. A ton of work from our capital projects team, our facilities, revenue, and marketing to make sure it was presentable to the public. We reopened it temporarily on August 20th for a one-day scrimmage. SDSU had a football scrimmage, and then we closed it for a couple weeks, reopened it on September 3rd for the first SDSU football game, and then it's been open ever since. And it's only been open for a month, and we've already had 5 big events there, and they're going to keep on coming. We've had 3 SDSU football games. The first one was September 3rd, and that was the weekend. It was a sold-out crowd. There was a weekend that we had a big heat wave. I think it was like 105, 110 at the game, so it kind of minimized the crowds a little bit, but it was a sellout crowd. And then Wave Soccer, they are our women's professional soccer team. They've played most of their season at the USD Soccer Stadium, USD Stadium. Their last two games, they moved to Snapdragon Stadium, and then they're going to play from now on at Snapdragon Stadium. But that game on the 17th was the largest crowd ever for a women's professional soccer game in the country. And the trolley was a big part of making sure that happened without a hitch. It'll be the site for many other events coming up, four more SDSU football games, including one this Saturday. The Wave Soccer has a playoff game coming up next Sunday. The San Diego Legion rugby team will be playing there starting in the spring. There's going to be a number of concerts there. Jimmy Buffett was supposed to be there in a couple weekends, but that got delayed because he's sick. But they're going to have a number of concerts there. The Monster Jam, which used to be at Petco Park, is now going to be at Snapdragon Stadium. That's going to be after the New Year's. They're also going to host international soccer and a number of other events. In terms of our service to the stadium, just like the concerts at Petco Park, we vary the service to the stadium based on the event. So for SDSU football games, we have a special shuttle that operates just from San Diego State to the stadium pregame, and then postgame, we do the reverse from the stadium to SDSU. We're providing 7.5 minute service pre and postgame between those two spots. We're estimating about 75% of the ridership for SDSU football games is coming from the east, from or further east. This is a picture of this is a game that they were playing a couple weeks ago. This is a field goal attempt by the opposing team. And you see a picture of the trolley. So this was on national TV. So it's pretty good advertising for the trolley there. For non-SDSU games, for the Wave games, we provide service mainly from the west. The audience is coming from the west, from Old Town, from downtown, from La Jolla, and so on. So we provide extra service to and from the west. In terms of ridership, we're averaging about 7,000 people for the big games, a little bit less for the lower capacity game. September 3rd and 17th for SDSU football and Wave Soccer, those were sold out games. The other games were lower capacity. So you see the estimated ridership there. We want to play a video. I mentioned the shuttle that we operate from SDSU to the stadium. This was from the September 3rd game. We'll just show a little snippet of it. We just want to show the ridership levels that were from San Diego State Station to the stadium. This is every train that comes into the station. You see the time that they're coming in. So every 5 to 10 minutes or so, and the crowds are just impressive. And then you get the same thing. There's a really big one. Same thing, reverse post game. it's speeded up to eight times the speed, I think. So we won't play the whole video, but it'll be available if anybody wants to watch it and get the gist. So it's been really exciting to have this open. There and been very successful, I think, but there's certainly been some challenges. It's the first events that we've had in that location in a few years. And it's a different special event audience than the Padre games. And it's much, much different for the various events. The people that are coming to the SDSU football game are a lot of students and so on. And the people that are coming for the Wave games, a lot of families. So really different audiences, and it's getting the trolley access to a lot of different people. One of the things that we can do at the stadium that we can't do elsewhere is we can funnel people so we can check fares going in and out of the station. So that's something that we used to always do at the stadium for Charger games and all that kind of stuff. We haven't done it in a couple of years because the stadium station hasn't existed. So it's an educational process for our passengers to let them know that this is happening. There's a new fare system since anybody has used the station. If you think about it, juniors at San Diego State have never seen a football game in Mission Valley because they've been playing up in Carson the last couple of years. So a whole new audience, a lot of new education. We've had some delays at the TVMs and stuff like that, but we're really doing a big educational push. We have station ambassadors out at the different stations pregame to help educate people on the fare system. We have them out pregame at the stadium to have, as people are leaving the station, we're educating them on Pronto, advocating for them to buy fares before they leave postgame. So we're really doing a big push to educate people on the fare system. We've also had challenges with cell phone service outside the station. At our TVMs, we're really advocating for people to download the Pronto app, but the cell phone service has really been lacking out there. So people aren't able to download the app. our IT and revenue departments just put a router out there yesterday, in fact, to provide free Wi-Fi service out there for passengers. So now people are at the TVM, it'll be a lot easier to download the app. So that would be a great change for passengers, and we'll see that this Saturday. Other special operations, we charter the trolley for a fee for groups that are interested. And this has really given us access to some groups that might not normally ride the trolley. We always get full cost recovery on this, if not a little bit more. The pictures you see on the right are the UCSD baseball team. They chartered the trolley to go to their baseball game at San Diego State. All their gear and everything. They're carrying their bats, their gloves, all their bags, everything. They walked straight from the trolley to the baseball game at San Diego State. And I talked to a number of these guys, and they had never ridden the trolley. So it's good to get them access to the trolley. And they won the game. I looked it up yesterday. They won the game. So we were teams are undefeated riding the trolley to their game so far. So, and then we also have a Dinner in White. That's the group that you see to the left. And that's an international group. It started in Paris, and now they do this all over the world. These people show up. They don't know where they're going to dinner. They were told to come to a trolley station. They rented three trolleys. The trolley picked them up, dropped them off at Santa Fe Depot, and they walked over to Broadway Pier for dinner. So that's a group. And again, many of them had never ridden the trolley before. So we're giving people access to the trolley, giving them a good impression and hoping that they ride again. So recap, since March of 2022, and really since April, thank you, since we only had one event in March, there's been a lot of stuff going on. 5 days of Comic-Con, 5 major stadium events, Snapdragon stadium events, 6 Petco Park concerts, 81 Padre games, and a number of other events I didn't even talk about, like Oktoberfest that we had last weekend. We provided extra service on the Orange Line, a number of SDSU concerts, other Snapdragon events. There's an SDSU soccer game there tonight. So there are all kinds of events. We estimate about 750,000 extra riders for these events so far. We like to say it's not just about the ridership, it's about the experience. And we get a lot of people posting on social media about the positive experience that they've had riding the trolley for these special events. So these are a number of comments about the Wave game. There's one about Petco Park or about the Padres and the Bad Bunny concert, Comic-Con. So we just get a lot of positive feedback from these events, and they're posting on their social media channels, and hopefully their friends see it and give the trolley a chance. Three of the top 5 impression posts for MTS for special events. So people are really interacting with our posts. We publicize all of our extra special event service. I estimate about 340,000 impressions on all of these posts. And for each of these events, we have a dedicated website that people can go to get information about the event, and you see all the unique views. So all these people are coming to the MTS website, that information about these special events, and hopefully they find out some other information about MTS while they're doing that. So that's really what we've been up to. It's a lot, and they're not stopping anytime soon. So we have SDSU football game this Saturday, 3 more games the rest of the year, potential Padre playoff games next weekend. If they win this weekend, when they beat the Mets, we'll have be playing the Dodgers next weekend. If they win that, we'll have the National League Championship Series and then maybe the World Series after that. Wave playoff game next Sunday. We have an Elton John concert coming up at Petco Park. SDSU basketball starting in November. They're supposed to be really good this year. We're expecting really big crowds. And then the Holiday Bowl at the end of the year and Monster Trucks right after the beginning of the year. So that's kind of what's on the agenda. And then Padre season will be starting up pretty soon thereafter. So that concludes the presentation. If there's any questions?
No, thank you, Brian. It's a really good presentation. I think we think a lot about our system and our lines and ridership, and I think it'll be really good for the board to hear this whole presentation. So we really think about the special events. Unfortunately, member Elo Rivera is not here. I'll ask the question for him, as given he's a Dodger fan. When we play the Dodgers, do you have to adjust your schedule? Because for some reason, Dodger fans can't manage to get to a baseball game before the second inning.
Well,
and then they invariably leave in the 7th inning.
We tell security not to let the Dodger fans
cultural. Yeah. I think that would be good.
But what we find out with the Dodgers really is that there's a lot of ridership from the South Bay coming up to see the Dodgers. So we do adjust.
And that's a problem for Mayor Salas. She needs to work. She needs to work on adjusting.
They're
that
not
problem.
My peeps. They're from Tijuana.
I will to hit a hot button issue as a Raider fan. I was there this weekend for the Raider game, and you know it's a beautiful stadium, but it holds 65,000 people and there's only 2,200 parking spots because of the footprint was very small when it was built. And so, you know, you do the math on 2,200 cars is all that can get there, and people manage to find other ways to get there. And that's a combination of transit, and they have a bridge to the strip. But it just shows you, like, people can, you know, if given the right incentive and if they have the right experience, you know, they can do that. And I think what we've done in all of these has been remarkable. One thing, I was talking to some of the Padres folks and they were touting how great this is. And maybe something we think about for next year, maybe we do a free ride day for a Padre game, but only if you have a Padre ticket. You know, maybe there's something we can do, you know, early in the season. Because my sense is, you know, if you do it once, whether you park and ride or, you know, however you get there and you have a good experience, then you're likely to do it again. And folks go to opening day are generally not doing it just that one time. But the other thing is, if you take the trolley downtown for a Padre game and you have a good experience, and then you're going to go downtown to go to dinner or to go to a show or something else, you have broken that barrier of getting a choice rider through the process of getting on and off. And so it could contribute to ongoing ridership. So just one thing, you know, as we look for any creative opportunities, and, you know, we could think about something similar for any of the other special events. I also find it interesting how you align the traffic patterns as someone who lives in City Heights and who went to Garth Brooks. There was not a lot of congestion getting out of City Heights to get to Garth Brooks. But I'm guessing the 8 was awfully congested. And so as you align that, I think is important. What is the, as it relates to Comic-Con and some of our conventions, how receptive are they to including things in the registration materials, telling people? Because, you know, a lot of times when you travel and you go to a convention, you kind of get an information sheet and these are the hotels. And if it says this is the easiest way to get around, you know, do they generally do that?
I'd probably let our marketing department respond to that. But we do work with them. A lot. We have information on the Comic-Con website, on the San Diego Convention Center website, that type of thing. So we definitely do work with them in terms of writing information ahead of time and pamphlets and stuff like that. Mark, and
yeah, sure. Mark Olson, Director of Marketing and Communications here at MTS. And yeah, we have a good working relationship with the Convention Center. We know the conventions that are coming up ahead of time, so we are able to make that direct connection with those different conventioneers that are coming.
Yeah.
So we do some of that. You know, I think it's something that we're looking to build on, right? You know, and seeing what we can do to actually, with the new capabilities of Pronto and possibly pushing out passes one day, mm-hmm. To conventioneers before they come into town, you know, will be something that we would look to do in the future.
Yeah. I mean, I think anything again there, I mean, the tourists aren't going to necessarily help sustain ridership if they're coming in for a convention, but it helps ridership. And if they come back, they'll do it. So I think anything that we can do there. The other thing, I wasn't aware you could charter it. And that may be something we may want to highlight a little more. And again, it's not going to be a massive jump in ridership, but it's interest. And if you get the right group of folks doing it, you can get some media attention, some press attention. Again, just highlighting the opportunity. And so, you know, thinking about that. How big does a group usually need to be for them to charter one?
They can rent one car. They can rent three cars. So
what does
it really
cost
varies
to take one? I mean, like, what's the rough cost? I don't need an exact cost.
The UCSD baseball charter was less than 1,000. The dinner and white was about 7,000. So
okay.
The UCSD baseball charter was just one car. Everybody, all the players fit in one car and one train. We went from UCSD to San Diego State, dropped them off, and right. We're done with it. Dinner and white, they rented three car trains, picked them up in three different locations, dropped them off at Santa Fe Depot. And then post event, picked them up at Santa Fe Depot and brought them home. So the scale could vary. You know, it's really based on how many operators we have available, the vehicles. So the UCSD one was a lot easier to implement than the dinner and white, just because the dinner and white was also during peak hour,
right,
regular service and so on.
A little
so,
more challenging.
Yeah.
It's kind of a cool feature though. I mean, if you have a group going to an event, you know, you have something like that. Yeah. It's just kind of a unique thing that, again, some of those choice riders, that might be the thing that it's when you're doing it.
One other comment, you mentioned about the getting tickets for the Padres and the free rides. I forgot to mention the presentation for San Diego State. The marketing department did come up with an agreement where people can park at San Diego State and get free trolley rides to the SDSU football games. And also the first 1,000 students that get a football ticket, they get a free ride on the trolley to the stadium. So there have been some efforts.
San Diego State could also do what UC San Diego did, just buy a pass for every student. Yeah. Encourage them to do that.
They should do that.
Sharon, do you have a comment?
I was just going to mention that our Pronto system is well set up for promotional cards. City of New York does it a lot where they have these specialty ones where people actually go to specific stations because they want the, you know, commemorative card for whatever event. So we've been talking, we positioned ourselves, our fair administrator has positioned us to have access to a bunch of cards in the spring because we've just been purchasing them correctly. And we're going to start focusing some of our marketing efforts with the cards themselves. So I suggested maybe the Padres might be a nice one, you know, for opening day, start, you know, like load the ticket vending machines until they're all sold out, you know, with some Padres, whatever. You know, it's just a unique way to kind of position the agency out there with the, you know, the brand recognition of the event that's coming in. So, but that's just one example.
Well, especially those events that are predominantly San Diegans. I mean, we want everyone to ride no matter what, but, you know, people going to Padre games generally live here, you know, convention folks, again, we want them all, but, you know, I think giving priority to those folks who may stick with us and ride more frequently. So, great. Let me ask any executive committee members, Mayor Salas.
So, thanks for that great presentation. It was really enlightening. And I know that I've used the trolley on many occasions to go to special occasions. Some as varied as a women's march a couple of times, and baseball games and concerts and even Charger games way back in the day. And even way back when the Rolling Stones were here, way a long time ago. But anyway, I just wanted to mention too that I'm just so impressed with our trolley staff and our security. I took a friend 2 weeks ago on Sunday to give him a tour of our trolley system. So we went from the South Bay all the way to UTC, had brunch, and then went on to UCS, came back, took the line all the way to Santee, and then came back. So, but I wanted to let you know, Sharon and staff, that in every instance, I was watching the security and the way that they handled people, and they were very, very professional and friendly to them. And it was a Sunday, so I don't know if that was any difference, but there were a number of people traveling on the a lot more than I thought I'd see on a Sunday traveling. But I just want to give a shout out to our security people that were there. There was one guy on the on our way, the blue line, when we got on after UTC and we went to UCSD. And I wish I could remember his name. Wait a minute, maybe my friend does because I texted him. Oh, it was something Castellanos. But anyway, he was on the leg from UTC to the blue line. And he was just really, he didn't know me from Adam. But he not only was friendly to me, but everybody else on the trolley. So I just wanted to give those kudos to our security.
Awesome. Thank you. One other thing, Brent, I encourage you, and I'm happy to, I'm sure they will be very receptive to this, talk to the county park staff, because when you look at the special events taking place at the waterfront park, Boots in the Park is a lot of people, you know, that are coming in. And we had the electronic music festival, really tens of thousands of people that are going in, and we have a trolley stop right there. And so that might be another one to kind of add into some of this, making sure it's in the promotional materials, making sure we're highlighting, making sure we're doing that the same, because the number of special events at the waterfront park that are in the, you know, 10 to 30, 40,000 folks is growing. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a few times a year, but it's just another thing to probably be good to add. And I'll make sure the parks folks are looking out for you and doing that.
Chair, I think we have one public comment.
Yeah.
Corina Contreras, please introduce yourself.
Yes. Hello, my name is Corina Contreras, and I apologize for any noise. It's the beautiful sound of transit. I'm on the bus right now. And I'm calling in my capacity as a transportation policy advocate for Climate Action Campaign. I just want to say this has been a really good, thorough presentation. And it's incredible to see the increase in ridership. But I will offer some suggestions as, you know, ridership depends on how easy it is to navigate the system. And part of navigating the system is being able to pay. So there are some pinch points, as was mentioned, you know, when there's no Wi-Fi, people are trying to download the Pronto app. So, you know, hopefully what we can do is expand method of payments for our transit. So whether that's, you know, people that have a debit or credit card that they can tap, or a phone using, you know, Apple Pay, anything like that, that would really help us in our fare box recovery. So I just want to offer that as a suggestion. Thank you. Have a good day. I just got off the bus. So yeah, I just wanted to offer that because I think if we want to continue to grow our ridership, we definitely want to make it seamless for new riders. But thank you so much for the presentation. Y'all have a good day.
Thank you. All right. Not seeing any other requests from other executive committee members, an informational item only, but thank you. Look forward to going to the full board. Let's go back and we have quorum now. Let's call the roll.
Fletcher?
Here, Fletcher here.
Sotelo Solis?
Sotelo Solis, I. Here. I am here.
Ila Rivera? Hall?
I'm here.
Moreno? Salas?
Here.
Sankey? Chair, we have a quorum.
All right, thank you. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the September 1st, 2022 meeting. Is there a second?
Second, Sotelo Solis.
All right, we have a motion by myself, second by Sotelo Solis. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
That motion carries unanimously. Do we have any requests for non-agendized public communication?
We do not, Chair.
All right, let's go to number six, review of the draft October 20th, 22 MTS board agenda.
Sure. Yeah, I have two more items that we're going to put on and we'd like to put them on consent. One is the we did a procurement for federal lobbying services. So we are ready to award and we would like to bring that to the board October 20th. Today we have Peter Pizer, our federal lobbyist, who we have had for some time through a contract with Sandag. But we went separately this time instead of going with Sandag. We just had different goals for our lobbying efforts. So you know, the hope is that we could put that on consent and hopefully you will award that contract. Then the other one is, you know, we have so much money coming in for our capital improvement program. That we are bursting at the seams in our capital implementation program. So we would like to add two new full-time equivalents, one in the procurement department and then one in the capital improvement, capital projects department. We just can't keep up with the work and it's only gonna get more and more as we try to competitively get these great projects going.
All right, no objection. Peter, welcome. Good to see you again. It's been a busy few years in the federal government, so we appreciate all the advocacy on behalf of MTS and Transit. No other changes to the draft MTS agenda, other staff communications and business, seeing none.
Oh, can I just say that as of yesterday when we did our free ride day, we know that we got at least 20,000 additional riders on trolley alone. So just the trolley. So we're really pleased with that. We'll be reporting to you, you know, official numbers later.
Awesome. Thank you. Committee member communication, not seeing any. Our next meeting date will be November 3rd, 2022. And with that, we stand adjourned. Thanks, everyone.